Welcome to Stay on Course with me, Julie Riga. My life has been a roller coaster of highs and lows, but what I know to be true is that when we are grounded in our purpose and savor the sweet moments of life, we are truly a success. Today, you are going to get the ingredients for success because life is salty and life is sweet. Together, let's explore the possibilities of our own lives and learn from thought leaders around the globe. Ready, guys? Let's cook it. Welcome, welcome, everyone, to the next edition of the Stay on Course podcast. Today, we have Dan Martell, who's an award-winning Canadian entrepreneur, investor, best-selling author, and coach to over 1,000 SaaS founders. And his new book has finally come out. It's called Buy Back Your Time. It is about getting unstuck, reclaiming your freedom, and building your empire. And in this episode, you're going to learn the secrets of Dan's success in buying back your time. So get your notebook out. You are going to want to take notes. And I have my co-host today, Julie Loken, and we are really going to dig deeper into the concepts of buy back your time. Welcome, Dan, to the Stay on Course podcast.
Hey, Julie's. Thanks for having me. Julie Squared. I love being on here. Appreciate the time.
We are plural. Don't get us confused, right, Jules?
Don't get us confused. And Dan, very happy to have you here. Very curious about how you got to this place in your life right now.
It's a great question.
And what is that place? Where are you right now?
Yeah, so physically, I'm in Ottawa, Canada. I just got off stage speaking at an event. And but what my life looks like today is I'm the CEO of 2 8-figure companies. One is SaaS Academy, which is the number one coaching company in the world for software as a service. That's what SaaS stands for. And then the other one is High Speed Ventures, which is my family office where I invest and buy companies. I've done 50 investments over the years, four unicorn billion-dollar companies, Udemy, Intercom, Hootsuite, GetAround, ton of cool
Love
founders.
All those. Love all those.
Wow. So early, I'm always first money in. I actually just got off a call with another investment I'm making I'm really excited about. And so I pretty much like have beaten both of those, but I'm also like somebody that is incredibly active. I've done 3 Ironmans this summer, 2 halves, 1 full. I just got back from 3 weeks traveling Europe with my family, my 2 boys, Max and Noah. They're 11 months apart, my wife, Renee. And, you know, I guess a lot of people turn to me because I'm somebody that gets a lot of stuff done, GSD style. And I think the reason why is because, you know, I start off the book with this story of just my upbringing where I grew up in just a really challenging environment, you know, and regardless if people can resonate with the specific stories or, you know, some, I just feel like everybody's gone through things. I was no different. Mine ended up, you know, at 17 years old, high and drunk in a stolen vehicle and a high speed chase, so a little different than most, but yeah, I told myself before I stole the car, I had a handgun and a backpack. And I said, if the cops stop, I'm just going to point the gun and let them take my life. And luckily, when I ended up crashing the car in the side of a house, I went for the gun and it got stuck. And I woke up sober the next day in a jail cell, really not knowing what my life was going to look like. And after doing 6 months in prison, an adult prison, even though I was 17, due to the severity of my crimes, I got released to a rehab center where I did 11 months of therapy. In this crazy cool place called Portage. And throughout that period, I kind of rebuilt a relationship with my parents and discovered what made me tick and my emotions and my personal worth and my self-esteem. I mean, I was broken. I was diagnosed with ADHD when I was 11. I was in foster care system my whole life. And at the end of doing the work, in rehab, I was helping Rick, the maintenance guy, clean out one of the cabins that were on site. It was an old church camp. And in one of the rooms was this old 486 computer and a yellow book on Java programming. And for whatever reason, something spoke to me about this book. I opened it up and it read like English. You know, it wasn't like computer zeros and ones. And I got the, this is 1997. So I got the computer to say, hello world. Which I thought I was the Doogie Howser. So you guys would know that reference. I thought I was the Doogie
Howser.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
Yeah, we're these young guys age. Today, when I tell that joke on stage, they're like, who's that?
Who's Doogie?
You immediately could tell we're 40 plus, couldn't you?
Yeah. Usually the 30 plus is kind of maybe sort of not really, but yeah, it was just crazy because it became my new addiction. Like literally writing code filled the gap in my life that used to be filled with bad habits and bad friends and negative beliefs and all these things. And entrepreneurship became literally the ultimate personal development program for me. So since then, I've just been on this journey of personal development and service. I really believe that every person's mission in life is to heal their trauma and help other people get through it. And like, I went through such a journey from 17 to, you know, I'm 42 now, and I still do the work. I get up every day and do the work. And, you know, and I decided a long time ago, I wanted to be the person in my family to break the, you know, that lineage. You know, my mom was adopted, two parents were alcoholics. My dad parents were alcoholics. You know, they probably suffered abuse to some degree. And I just said, not for me. And, turns out that if you do that plus focus on building business, and you're willing to do the work. I mean, I've built five companies, exited three, two were venture backed out of San Francisco, Silicon Valley. You know, I became incredibly wealthy when I was 28 and I sold my first company, and, I've just kept building that empire, and that's what my life looks like today.
That's amazing.
What is wealth? Yeah. I mean, you said you became incredibly wealthy at 28. What do you mean by wealthy? And is, do you have that same definition at 28?
No. No. Like here's the crazy part. I'm on a pretty intense growth game. So even when we meet in a year, I'm going to reintroduce myself because I'm not the same person I am today. That like, I just know that about me. I'm just like, even the things that I remember thinking to myself 12 months ago or 3 years ago or 5 years ago, I'm just like, oh, well, that was juvenile, right? Like it didn't, in the context of the world, it did make sense. Wealth back then was just dollars, right? Like money in my bank account, right? Millions of dollars. I was 28 when I sold the company. I was the only owner. I retired. I lasted 4 months. I got bored. All my friends were still in university. And then I decided to just pack up everything, move to San Francisco. Didn't know a soul. Wanted to see if any of my crazy ideas would work in like the land of the technology gods. So yeah, I would say back then wealth was the dollars, and today wealth to me is of really the ability to serve. Like, you know, I don't take for granted that I have the privilege every day to buy back my time to then hopefully do something useful with it. So like, you'll never hear me say, oh, you need to hire this person to build a business that can run without you so you could spend time on a beach. Like that will never come out of my mouth. My philosophy is at the end of the day, when my time here on earth is done and I meet my creator, I'm going to meet the person he thought I could have become. And I don't want that person to be a complete stranger. Like that's the way I think about it. It's like, and I know what I'm capable of. And I know I have things I got to continue to work through to do more. But it's not more for the sake of having more. It's doing more to be an example of what's possible. Because those people showed up in my life. Like, you know, Brian, the guard in jail, he told me that he didn't understand why I was in jail. He's like, you don't belong here. Like 17 years old, this man that had no reason to stop me, to pull me aside, to tell me this, you know, breathed into me a belief about what was possible for me that I didn't even ever, I've never heard or believed at the time. And that just, that's come up so many times that like, to me, my mission and my passion is really to continue to be an example of what's possible. So I spend most, like every Friday is my kind of, I work with at-risk youth and I share my story and I breathe into them, you know, self-esteem through business. Like that's kind of like, you know, they come for the bag and the business wealth and I give them the personal development stuff. But yeah, I would say wealth is, really about having the ability and the freedom to do work that serves other people.
Yeah. And so I'm just so curious because your new book coming out, Buy Back Your Time. Tell us the like first step to buying back your time as, you know, a young person or somebody new in their own business.
It's a great question. It's literally the first thing I address because I've been doing this for 15 years, coaching other founders to scale, most of them in software, but many of my friends are agency owners, coaches, trainers, doesn't matter. Literally, this applies to all businesses. First thing is to understand the value of your time, what I call the buyback rate. So I'll give you the math, But again, my background is software, so sometimes it's I lose people in the numbers.
I'm ready. But I'm grabbing my calculator right now because I'm
perfect.
Really bad at math.
So what you want to do is whatever income you make from your business, and this includes distributions, what you pay yourself, and profit. And I would also throw in there the expenses you put through your business that aren't really expenses. Let's be honest. And that's the income side of like what the business you've created produces for you in your life. And then you divide that number, let's call it $100,000, by 2,000. Why? Because that's how many hours there are in a year that most people work. And then because I want people to get at least a 4x ROI on their investment of buying back their time, I then divide that number by 4. So at 100,000, 2,000 is $50. And if you divide it by 4, it's $12.50. So my argument is that if you do anything in your business that you could outsource, outtask, pay anybody else on earth to do for $12.50, that you are inefficient with how you even look at buying back your time. And because we live in a world where you can hire somebody full-time at $3 an hour in the Philippines, right? Because that's the beauty of the internet and day partying in countries and different GDPs and all that stuff. There's very little in the operational administrative side of things that people should be doing in their business. Now, there's a psychology aspect and a mindset people need to overcome around like, nobody can do this better than me. There's how do you create a system somebody else can follow to get the same results you get? How do you hire and find these people and train them? We can talk about that because that's definitely the back part of the book. But the first part is just understanding that $1 million companies were not built off of $10 tasks. It's impossible.
Wait, say that again. I love that.
$1 million companies were never built off $10 tasks. So my dad used to say, like, I like mowing my own lawn. I said, well, why don't you mow the neighbor's lawn? And he's like, well, I don't like doing it that much. And I go, then you don't really like doing it. I actually would do the stuff for free that I get paid to do, because I do, because I love doing it. But anything that I wouldn't do for my neighbor or for a stranger, I probably shouldn't be doing if I can get somebody else to do it, because I should take that time to go work on higher value activities. See, most entrepreneurs fail in business, not because there was a market problem or a product problem. It's because they, as they grow, they hit the pain line. The pain line that I've discovered is no entrepreneur will grow into pain. That's a big one. No entrepreneur will grow into pain. If growth equals pain, I'll tell you what they do. One, they stall. They'll do one of three things. They'll either stall, which means they will decide, I don't want to grow. I'm good now. My buddy Matt said that to me. He had an electrical company. And he goes, Dan, is it okay? Like, I watch your stuff. I see you talk about scale and growth. It's like, what if I just want to like stay where I'm at? And I go, well, Matt, the market isn't going to stay where it's at. GDP growth, 3-5% per year. So like, if you did nothing, you're slowly dying. So let's acknowledge that. Two, the customer demand of what you deliver and the service quality level is always going to be higher and higher. And if you don't lose the customers this year, you'll probably lose them in the next 3 years, because somebody else will do more for them at the same price than you're doing, because you're not growing. Or three, your team will turn over at a higher rate, because no team member that's worthy of, like, that are good are going to stick with you if they don't see a future with you. You know, my whole mission for dreams and goals is that they have to be big enough for your whole team's individual dreams and goals to fit inside of, right? And if you don't do that, they're going to leave. So when you hit that pain line, usually, you know, either stall, you sabotage, right? Sabotage is a funny one, because it's a sneaky deaky psychological thing people do to themselves. Sabotage means I have an opportunity to 10x my business by replying to an email, but I'm going to drag my feet replying to that email until the opportunity is gone. And then I'm going to blame the opportunity for not happening, not the fact that I dragged my feet.
You're speaking to your, yeah, and Julie's laughing. Julie Briga's laughing. Tell Dan, because you knew my light bulb went off.
Well, I'm building a business, and so there's a lot of things that I need to be doing as far as connecting with people. But my problem is my time. Like, my time is dedicated to this other thing that brings me the money that supports my household. So, you know, I'm in a predicament. But I really need to find a way to just release myself from the time that I'm spending there so that I can do what I love to do, you know? And so Julie's laughing at me because we work together on these like things on a weekly basis. We're working to build a program that I'm going to be releasing in January. And it's like, you know, just getting that time and the focus to do the things that are the high level.
What do I say to you?
But building connection is everything, that part.
Yeah. Well, that and follow up.
Follow up. Yeah.
I mean, this is the thing, is like the sabotage part is a sneaky one because people don't realize they're doing it. And it shows up in multiple forms. But that's the second S. And then the third S is sell, right? And I get the call where, you know, a buddy of mine, Jason, had an agency. They were doing great. 2 million in revenue, about 15 employees, profitable. But his life was chaotic and he was stressed out and he was having panic attacks and he went through a bout of adrenal fatigue. And, you know, I was like, if none of these problems were existing, would you sell the business? He's like, no. And I go, well, then we just need to restructure the way you grow the business, because the buyback principle that I talk about in my book, the fundamental change is you don't hire for capacity, you hire for calendar. And I say this again, we don't hire to add capacity to the business. We hire to buy back time out of our calendar. And if you do it the opposite, which he was doing, hiring more account managers, hiring more people to do the agency work, hiring more people to run the books or whatever it is, and you don't start with the person who's running the company, then the risk is, and this is why I love entrepreneurs, is entrepreneurs wake up every day to create a better world for everybody else to exist in. But if they don't build the business right, that world starts to hurt the pain line. And instead of creating more, solving more problems, they decide to shut it down, go get a job, stay small, not do more of what they're great at, right? So like, yeah, that's what I'm so passionate about getting this philosophy out there, is that if people deployed capital, as soon as they spent any money on labor using the philosophies I teach, then as they grow, they'll literally have more time and do higher quality work that lights them up. And those are my three filters. And if you do that, then growing will feel energizing, right? Like, yeah, I have zero constraints on my psychology of like wanting to build my empire bigger, because the bigger it gets, the more fun I have, right? But that can be true from day one if you follow the right, what I call the replacement ladder.
So the replacement model is the infrastructure and the foundation that's like running the business that frees up your time to do the stuff that you love to do. Because in that way, you're building that good energy that is going to lead you to success.
It lights you up or takes, it either gives you energy or takes your energy, right? And it's either things that make you money or doesn't make you money. And that's the drip quadrant, right? So if I could draw it, I would draw, you know, like, doesn't make you a lot of money and sucks your energy, right? I would put receivables on there, right? Accounts receivable, bookkeeping, you know, reconciliations and bank accounts.
Yeah.
Social media.
Social media.
Well, social media could be like makes you money, but still doesn't really like, you know, because like it's marketing. But yeah. So like if I walk you through the replacement ladder, for example, the first level of ladder is admin, an executive assistant. Okay. Now people hear this all the time. I'm not the first person to talk about it. I'll tell you what's very unique and different about my approach to it is it's not a virtual assistant. It's an executive assistant. And there's two things that need to be true if you're executing the way I teach. One, they manage 100% of all inbound requests or emails to you. 100% they filter, first filter. And they manage 100% of your calendar. You are not allowed to touch your emails or your calendar. You have to work through that individual.
The emails.
It's very hard. And I'll tell you why, though, is because your email is nothing more than a public to-do list for every stranger on the internet to ask things of you.
Booyah.
Like you.
Hola. Yes. Okay.
You would not allow, if I had an office downtown Main Street, USA, I wouldn't allow strangers to just walk in off the street and request things of me whenever they felt like it.
Yeah.
And that's how the internet somehow changed that, right? So I got to spend a week with Richard Branson about 8 years ago, and I watched a guy who runs 400 companies. He owns 400 companies, Virgin Group of companies. He's a billionaire, other billionaires want to be like. Manage those companies. He has two CEOs of that infrastructure. And he does not sit on board seats, and he travels the world spending time with entrepreneurs like myself that he wants to meet. And Helen, his executive assistant, manages Richard. Every morning they have breakfast. And during that breakfast, I met Helen. I was like more interested in talking to her than Richard.
Wow.
I was like, I need you to tell me how he thinks. That's fascinating to me. Right.
Yes.
I don't want to hear Richard's approach to like his vision, because he's operating at a multi-billion dollar level. Most people, it's like the way he lives doesn't resonate, but Helen can teach me stuff. And the way they work is all requests on Richard's time comes through her. He doesn't do email, right? Zero. Like people used to run billion dollar companies with no internet, right? So like there's a different way of working that we've just we got to think about. So all requests doesn't have doesn't have email. They all go to Helen. They have breakfast. She routes most of the requests, but the 10% that she doesn't know how to deal with, she sits down with Richard and she says, here's your calendar. Here's what we got going on. Bob needs to talk to you about this. I've got time here. And he'll go, yes, no, yes, no, yes, yes, no. And then in the future, she learns. She's been with them for 13 years. She travels the world with them. Every morning they have breakfast. And after that breakfast meeting, he came with us skiing all day. He went and did a charity thing. He went and did a press thing. He literally does the thing only Richard Branson can do.
Yes.
And anything else, he gives it to somebody else.
Right.
And that is why the buyback principle is so powerful. It's, I want people to work their way up to the point where they're in the top right quadrant of this matrix, where they're literally waking up, working on things that light them up, that makes them the most money possible. My dad, I'll tell you, my dad and I, we just talked before this call, and he's like, why aren't you doing more speaking? And I go, it's not a good use of my time. And he was like floored because he knows what I charge to keynote. And he goes, how is that not worth your time? And I didn't want to embarrass my dad, but my dad doesn't really know how much money I make because, you know, I think parents are just, it's awkward, right? They're like a parent. They see you as a 13-year-old teenager. And my dad, as you guys know from my history, like he still thinks I'm, you know, selling drugs or something, even though I've been in, you know, winning awards and Mark Cuban was an investor, like all these crazy stuff. But anyways,
25 years later, dad, Dan's, I know, okay. They still, Dan's doing okay.
I might be okay, but he, you know, he was like, I don't get it. I go, I love you, dad. There's a book coming out on this topic I wrote. You can read it and it'll probably explain it better, but it's just when I look at like where I can invest my time, if I go speak at an event, it's a day of travel, it's keynoting for 30 minutes, a day travel back. It's 3 days. Okay. I know what my hour's worth using the buyback rate I just taught all of you. It's way more than a 50K keynote. Like just, I'm just not at that level anymore. I was maybe 10 years ago, but now I'm always trying to trade up, and that's the whole point. Now I'll do things that light me up that make me a lot of money, but I'm just fortunate where I have 1,000 coaching clients in my programs. And that is actually more fun for me than go speak to 2,000 strangers at an event where I don't even get to connect with them. So it's like, wow. I'd rather go or work with my teams.
Oh my gosh.
I'm rethinking everything right now, Julie, aren't you?
I am too. Yeah, I'm like, well, I mean, I just said this because I do facilitation and speaking, and my rate is not 50,000 a speech by far, but it's much that more. Thing. But the thing is that it is 3 days. Like you have to travel, you have to, you know, do the event, you have to come home, and that's a lot of money. And so you really have to think about it. Is that a good use of your time? And I get that. But I love all of these things that you're saying. So it sounds like the first thing is to get rid of those administrative tasks and hire somebody to help.
Inbox and calendar is level one.
Who is your Helen?
It's always hire somebody.
Who is your Helen?
Anne. You guys probably interacted with her. Anne. Yeah.
We all need a
Helen. I don't do emails. Like I literally don't do emails.
So when I emailed you, was it Anne who, I think you wrote me back, or was it Anne pretending to be you?
She should put Anne at the bottom, but it would have been from my email because that's another secret.
Yeah.
Maybe because I requested it. I don't know. No, Anne will usually say, hey, it's Anne. I got this before Dan and I thought you'd appreciate a response quicker. But yeah, I don't do email. Like they talk about zero inbox zero. I talk about zero inbox.
Yeah, I hate email. Julie gets mad at me because I don't respond to things.
Well, you need to hire a Helen.
I was walking over to the venue this morning. Yeah, I was walking over to the venue this morning and I called her up. We have a meeting we run every day. It's very similar. It's just, and we walk through the day and what's coming up and da 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 da. And then I hang up and I'm good to go. And she has a team. And I have, like, that's where, like, level one, everybody should do that. If I had to start from zero today, if I lost it all, I go live on my brother's couch and I would hire an executive assistant. Day one. Why? A, because I know my value. And in a day, if I'm doing anything that isn't talking to the market, selling to the market, delivering to the market, anything other than those three things, then it's not a good use of my time. So I would even hire somebody, even have no cash in the bank account. I would convince them, like, please give me 4 weeks. I will go make us money. But you need to take care of all this stuff because I know that any time not doing that isn't the best use of my time. And then I would build from there. So level two is delivery. Anything that you spend time on delivering the thing you sold, you should hire somebody for onboarding and support. You can still do the thing, but onboarding the customer, supporting the customer, you should give to somebody else.
Yeah.
A lot of people are like, well, how do you do that? They hired you. I have people that pay me to coach that I don't talk to, that I now I don't talk to them about anything that doesn't look like coaching.
Right. You just show up for
Right.
your coaching
I don't even do
engagement.
sales calls anymore. That's level four, right? But literally it's delivery is level two. Level three is marketing, right? Because I've discovered, I have a friend, Renee, where he has an agency and he spends 2 or 3 months doing marketing, builds a bunch of customers, gets busy doing the work. And then his revenue goes up and down, up and down, up and down, right?
Oh.
Because he runs out of customers and then he has to go do more marketing. And then he runs out of customers. Instead of waking up and saying, hey, who can do marketing every day for me so that I'm always generating new customers, right? So that's level three is marketing. Level four is sales. The day that an email comes in, a referral, hey, Julie, I've got a friend I think should be working with you. And you can reply and go, let me introduce you to Jane. She works on our, you know, she's our product specialist. I call them scale specialists. You can call them whatever, account manager. And she's best to connect with because I'm traveling right now or whatever reason you want to give them. I'm busy working with the team. We'd love to see if we can be helpful. And then that person takes that conversation and moves it to a new customer and you pay them 10% of that sale. And you're like, if most fortunes are made in the follow-up, founders and CEOs that are doing sales is not doing the level of follow-up that needs to be done. That if I'm getting paid 10% on success only, I am going to be aggressive in my follow-up. I'm going to perfect my sales script. I'm going to get better at my proposal writing. Whereas CEOs, they shouldn't be doing that.
No.
So just hiring that person, getting, let's say, 3 months worth of revenue increase because they're doing follow-up, they're increasing the conversions, they're pulling deals forward, right? I'm not putting off 10 days because I'm busy. I'm in Europe for 3 weeks, so let me talk to you when I'm back. No. Hey, let's talk tomorrow, right? And having somebody do that. So that's sales, it's level four. And so what's cool about that level is you now have, check it out, marketing, get new customers, delivery, onboard new customers, and sell new customers. If you just do those four hires in that order, you now have a business that can make money while you are sleeping, which is the holy grail. This is what everybody wants, right?
So how many people on your team to start you need? Was it four?
That would be four. That would be four.
Four people.
Yeah,
and
that's it.
A lot of entrepreneurs are at the, you know, they're doing all the things. They're, okay, this is what I
badge of honor.
Well,
I work 100
hours
a week. That's what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah, and I see like the chasing of the shiny objects. I see, you know, putting all their energy into social media and it drives me crazy. I think we're getting spoon-fed the wrong information. So this is brilliance right here. And what about the entrepreneur that doesn't have the budget? You said, you know, just give me 4 weeks and hiring that executive assistant. But how do they
you keep working your way up?
That?
This is the thing is you literally start, like you make money. So like, let's say you're starting a business and you're charging $50 an hour. Right? That's $100,000 a year. So take $12.50 of that and hire somebody, or $3 and go hire somebody in the Philippines, right? Like it there's no level. Like if you're making no revenue, then great. You have to work to make revenue. If you have no profit, you got to fix your business model, right? But what I discover is people that have a team of four or five people, and they've hired people for capacity. So they have like a podcast editor, and they have a person that does this other thing, and then they have this other. And it's like those things aren't making them money, and it's not a place where they're spending most of their time that they could hire. Like, it costs me more to hire a podcast editor than it hires an executive assistant. Right? Those are different value skills. So you always want to start. That's why it's a first principle. This is a mathematical equation that you can't break. It's physics. That the rule of life is to keep trading your time, taking the profit that you've made to hire the next big block of time to free up your time to then go learn the new skill to then go create more value with that time. This is how business has always worked from the age of business and capitalism. It's just, it's never been discussed this way. It's never been seen through this lens. My background in software is why I've always operated this way. I didn't think it was unique until a decade ago. People kept saying to me, like, you do things completely different than what I've ever seen. And when I started teaching, it wasn't even called the buyback principle. It was just like this framework for scale, taught it in San Francisco. And then now it's a book.
How do you find help for $3 an hour? Is that real?
Oh my gosh.
Upwork.com. Go on Upwork.com. There's 10,000 people.
For $3 an hour.
Yeah, $3, $4.
Wow.
Wow. I mean,
Yeah. My dad paid me $3 an hour when I was a kid to move information from his PDA, they were called personal, like CRM. He's like hardware. They were like a flip, like a clamshell
yeah.
thing with the full keyboard. He was in sales and he'd buy a new one and they didn't have a data transfer and he'd pay me. Like, you can get an intern. Like, this is what's crazy is there's so many ways to get help. It's just most people don't even know what to do with the help.
That's right.
So I'm giving you
That's right.
the this is the first level, level two, level three, level four, level five. Level five is what I call executive leadership, right? When you can start hiring people to own departments in your business. And that's, again, the reason I had to write the book is because there's all these psychological mindset beliefs that pop up as soon as I say something. Like, as soon as I say that, I know what comes up. It's like, well, where do you find these people? And I can't afford to pay those people. And like, how would I train them? And how do I know if they're doing a good job? And I've tried this in the past and it didn't work. And so I have to like systematically overcome these mindset beliefs. And that's what I do in the book because I don't have enough time. But it's just, like things like if you don't have an assistant, you are one.
Wow, ain't that the truth?
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. If you're still booking your own travel and doing research and I mean, the amount of time, that's why, like, I work with founders that are in the eight figure plus level. Like, I just got off stage and literally I got swarmed afterwards. And these people are at 13 million, 15 million. They're like, I still do all this stuff. And I'm like, great, that's your bottleneck. That'll literally be your ceiling for output until you decide, I need to learn how to build this. They got lucky that they were willing to overwork, right? 7 days a week, 100 hours a week, 16 hours a day. They were able to do that to overcome the lack of their ability to get leverage, but they'll all admit that their life is one day away from deciding, I don't want to do this anymore.
Wow. Right, because they're
And
burnt
that's,
out.
they're so burnt out. I see it. They're not healthy. They're not taking care of their body. They ain't doing anything that looks like an Iron Man. They ain't traveling at all. They ain't recharging. Right. And like
And
for
they're probably
me, it's like
divorced
if,
5 times over.
so who's really winning? And look, I had to go through all of this when I was 20. Eight, I came home and my fiance at the time dropped the ring on the counter and said, I'm not doing this anymore.
Wow.
8 weeks before the wedding.
Wow.
Wow.
Good thing
I
though
was
that you
really
met
good
Renee.
at time management. Oh yeah, Renee's she's the best of the best. But the reason I shared that is because back then I thought time management and productivity was the problem to solve. And I got really good at time management productivity in the sense that for the hours I worked, I was very efficient,
Yeah.
but it still required me at, I think we were at 4 million in revenue to do a lot of work. Like there was no way based on that mental model I had then at 28 that I could ever grow out of the position I was at. And that's why like a lot of entrepreneurs, they really resonate at 12 employees and about 1.5 million in revenue. That's this level where you can't outgrow the work hard mentality. Where you need to learn the buyback principle, or you will just sit there and bang your head against the wall.
I love
Wow.
that. I mean, I would adore if Dan could come once his book's launched. And is your book on pre-order right now?
Yeah, everybody should go grab a copy. It could be
Yeah.
depending on, I think we're releasing this in January, so it comes out on the 17th. So
We
if you're
can
listening to
pre-order
this,
it
it's
though.
probably available. Yeah,
I need
everybody
to
should
get
go
this
pre-order it.
book.
Yeah,
I feel like you've opened a whole new world for me,
We're
Dan.
kind of
Like,
silent right now because we're like, oh my God, Dan Martell is just the
blows
new.
our mind.
The Mecca of Dan Martell. He is leading entrepreneurs to the promised land. And I'm going to call your Helen. Anne, shout out to Anne. We need you.
Yeah.
About coming on again and talking more about your book.
How about everybody? I don't know, like I don't want to cause a big problem for Anne, but if you email me dan@danmartell.com, two L's Martell, and you want my SOPs, my standard operating procedures for not only my executive assistant, but also my house manager, because that's a game changer as well. And we can talk about that.
Wait,
And if
house
you want a
manager? This
training,
is going to be
oh
another
yeah,
hour here.
next level.
Wait, okay,
But
wait. I need a
I'm
house
gonna give you those
manager.
three.
Yes.
Everybody does at scale. The third thing is I'll give you the session I did with my coaching clients with a new executive assistant I hired, Robin, who's fantastic, who's with me for years. 3 weeks after I hired her, I interviewed her for my clients and let my clients ask her questions about hiring, onboarding, test project, everything.
Wow.
I'll give you guys all that. And you just email dan@danmartell.com and Anne will and
You
just say
know,
like
you're going to be
SOPs for
getting a lot of
EA.
you're going to be getting a lot of emails now.
but it doesn't change my life. This is what I want people to understand. Like, you can be generous. You can be generous more when you actually approach it. I told you guys before we got started, my job is to be a servant, to create as much as I can, to give as much as I can. It'd be selfish. Like, I had a client that his wife didn't want to allow him to hire somebody to clean the house. And I said, hey, do you realize that's very selfish of her to not create employment in her hometown? Like, dude, you make $2 million a year, $500,000 in profit, and you can't spend 20, 25 bucks an hour because your wife is going to feel a certain way and she's not allowing you to create employment and economy for the local community. I mean, that's super selfish.
Wow.
And that's what got him to communicate and got her over the fear of being judged by her mom for not being able to take care of her house. But she was complaining she couldn't go to the gym. She didn't have time. It's like, dude, you need to take care of your wife. You need to take care of your home. This is not a business only practice.
Mm. I mean, it is clear that there are success principles here that people are, they just don't have access to this kind of information, or they haven't heard it in this way before. But I mean, I haven't heard it.
Scarcity mindset.
Yeah, I haven't heard it in this way before. It's very unique, I think.
I've read 1,500 books on everything business, productivity. I've been to the David Allen Getting Things Done seminars. I've read E-Myth, Checklist Manifesto, Work the System, Sam Carpenter, you name it. I've studied the best of the best. And the fundamental missing component was, how do I deploy a dollar of labor in my business in the most efficient manner possible?
Yeah.
What is the strategy? What is the sequence? How do I measure it? And that's why I just started teaching it, because everybody else told you what to do, but systems and process and all that stuff, but they were missing that part. And then the book is really that plus some really cool leadership things, because a lot of times people, they're not able to lead other individuals, and that's the problem. So they might be able to hire, they may be able to pay for it, but then the way they lead is the reason why the people don't stay. And if you don't have continuity, then you don't have a competitive advantage. So my rule is, people staying with me for years, right? Like, one of the, it's funny, I was in San Diego for our event, and we always fly different team members in that are like Viv, who's in the RevOps team. He's like an engineer or software. He's not on the coaching team. So like, we flew him to the event, and I love this guy so much. We went for a workout, a run around the city. I told him, I said, I want to work with you for the rest of my life. And he smiled. He goes, I would like that too. And I go, great. If you ever feel that that's not what you want to do, please let me know. Like, call me. He has my cell number. Because like, to me, that is competitive. Like, if you have a team that you can learn how to lead in a way where they are with you for a decade or two decades, and you don't have turnover, and you take all that institutional knowledge and know-how and just keep rolling it forward because you are a better leader. That's why in the book, I had to have a whole chapter dedicated to leadership with fundamental change. I'll give you guys want one strategy that I think would serve everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. It's called the 1-3-1 rule. So one of the fundamental things I teach all my leaders is the 1-3-1 rule, which means that when somebody comes to you with a problem, ask them to identify the one specific challenge they're talking about, offer three recommendations of things they've researched to solve the problem, and the one specific one they want to recommend they move forward with. Okay. The reason why, Steve Jobs said, it's easy to hire somebody and tell them what to do. It's hard to hire people and have them tell you what to do. So from day one, when anybody comes to me with a problem, I ask them, what's the specific challenge you want to discuss? They tell me. Sometimes I got to help them because they don't know. And then I go, what are the three options to solve that problem? They go, I don't know. And I said, well, do you need time to research it? They go, yeah. I said, great. When do you want to circle back? I don't know. Tomorrow afternoon. Perfect. Okay. And I do this all the time. Well, you guys can already figure. And then what's the one thing you recommend? 90% of the time, I'm like, yeah, that's the one. Do it. So when people build the plan, they don't fight the plan. Right. So they build the plan because they're the one that researched it and they recommend it. And when you do the 1-3-1 rule, you're developing people that see problems and solve them, because they're going through the same mental strategy that you would go through as the owner. You literally do this. You just don't know you do this. You see a problem. You go talk to this person, research this, look at this. Well, I could do this. This is the one I'm going to do. And then you go do it. And the reason why is because, like, we're doing other people's jobs. I had an HR person, a head of people, this guy, Adam, that worked for me. And he came to me. He's like, you know, I don't know how we're going to hire 12 people in the next quarter. And I go, cool. He's like, well, why are you okay with that? I said, I don't know. It's not my problem. You're the head of people. This is your job. You're going to solve this. And he's like, well, I don't know how. And I go, but you're going to figure it out. He goes, well, I've never done it before. I go, dude, if I hired you to tell you what to do, then why did I hire you? Like, I'm not doing your job.
Right.
I said, I'm here to love you and support you and appreciate you, but you go out and find three options and then come back and tell me which one you recommend. He literally never came back. He got it. He got the thing done. And guess what? The more you do that with people, you build an organization of folks that identify problems and solve the problems. I get that from my buddy, Brad. It's one of the most powerful.
It's really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 1-3-1.
It's good. I've done that before. And, you know, I worked with this young person who started with me as an intern, and she's asking me these questions. And I'm like, you know what? Google has all the answers. So why don't you go find the answer and come back to me? And this is how she's become a director at, like, you know, 29 years old, because it's, you're helping them develop the skills that they need to be successful. And that's the power of a coach. So I love that.
And of micromanaging, and, you know, it's letting go of control as well. That's a resonating message I hear. Let go of control and it will happen.
80% done by somebody else is 100% yep. effing awesome.
That's it.
100%. No,
Dan, 100% freaking awesome. But 80% done by somebody else. They'll never do it like you, and you should never expect it.
My daughter said to me once, she's like, Mom, why are you watching me fail? I'm like, I'm not watching you fail. I'm helping you learn. Like, that was like the whole thing. It's like, you know,
yeah, failure is a lesson.
Yeah. Right?
And Dan wouldn't be here if he wasn't incarcerated for 6 months and made those, you know, you probably would just be on the same trajectory. So
zero regret. Like, my dad's like, isn't it crazy? Don't you wish you didn't? And I'm like, not at all. Like, it, the pain was required for me to go on a pursuit of discovering what my purpose and passion is. Like, that had to happen.
Ooh, boom.
Yeah.
I love it. We love this, Dan. We're going to need you back. I'm going to reach out to Anne, but you
just email me at Dan@DanMartel. That way I keep it all centralized.
Okay.
But yeah, I'd love to support your,
because there's a fortune in the follow-up, you know, so that's where you gain your fortune. But we are so appreciative. You are here on the Media Casters. I have never taken so many notes in any interview as I have today. Like, I'm like writing notes. I'm like, dang, this is good. So
Dan, tell us about your coaching. Like, how does that work?
So I only coach today software entrepreneurs. I'm actually going to be launching a business growth program behind the book, because mm-hmm. I've literally been, you know, coaching for the last 5 years, the best of the best in the software world, ClickFunnels founders and Carrot.com and, you know, Cody and Devin, that you guys know, they introduced us.
Cody Harvey, another shout out to Cody Harvey and
just
Devin.
Amazing
Johnson.
Entrepreneurs. Yeah, it's just I'm helping rich people get richer because they're in software. So I really want to build a community of a coaching program that really unpacks the book and the mindsets. So that'll be coming in kind of hopefully Q1. But yeah, honestly, I have my YouTube channel. It's got 500 videos. I teach everything I learn. It's a philosophy of mine. I give on Instagram stories every day, motivation, LinkedIn, same thing. So I produce a ton of content on social, but my coaching until probably in the next few months has been reserved for only software entrepreneurs, like product and market and revenue. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to open that up for business owners, because I just feel called to serve a bigger audience.
That's amazing.
Wow. There's something super about awesome. The energy.
Thank you, Dan, for being a guest on the Stan Course podcast. I want to just give a shout out to this new book, Buy Back Your Time. It has so many gems. And I just received the book. I am learning about playbooks. I am learning about how to buy back my time. And I'm so thankful for the work that you have done here. And I recommend that everyone goes out and gets this book. Thank you so much, Dan. My dad, Ennio Riga, was not just a chef. He was my hero. From the hardships of World War II to the heights of culinary excellence, his story is nothing short of remarkable. Now, this story lives on in Stay on Course, a book that is very close to my heart. It's filled with his own words, his recipes, and the wisdom he imparted to me. Just imagine, 4 months before he passed, he handed me his life story, urging me to finish it. In these pages, you'll discover the secrets behind mouthwatering dishes and the lessons he taught me about leadership and perseverance. And trust me, there are some incredible tales in here
like the time he pulled off a birthday bash for Frank Sinatra with just 48 hours notice. So, if you're hungry for inspiration and craving a taste of Ennio's legacy, head over to stayoncoursebook.com. That's stayoncoursebook.com. Grab your copy and let his story ignite your passion.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Stay on Course. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast so Julie can continue serving up delectable experts and appetizing content directly to your earbuds. And remember, right now, you have the ingredients to be living the life you are meant to live. This has been a production of The Media Casters.